If you're sick of having to wade through 2 hours of fluff in order to get a few good takeaways, tune into the Art of Manliness podcast. We glean and distill the very best insights from the world's experts in self-improvement, philosophy, practical skills, history, and more. And we do so in under an hour without the eye-roll-inducing filler. You walk away from every episode of the Art of Manliness podcast with actionable insights you could start implementing today in order to improve your life. Check out great episodes that I enjoy, like the cues that make you more charismatic and how to avoid death by comfort. Available wherever you get your podcast on your favorite podcast player. Of course, if you want to improve your life, listen to the Art of Manliness podcast today. Indulge in the past with History on the Rocks, the podcast that brings you the fascinating tales of lesser-known history while you get ready for the weekend with your favorite drink in hand. Join Cody and Audrey as they uncork the stories that time forgot. From famous people like George Washington and his distillery to pirate queens causing mayhem on the high seas, each episode is a journey through the ages with endless possibilities. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram to keep up with the news about the latest episodes. So grab a glass, enjoy, relax, and join us every Thursday for History on the Rocks, the History on the Rocks podcast, where you'll learn about the past while sipping in the present. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. That's History on the Rocks. Learn about the past while sipping in the present.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. Your host, JP John Paz, with me today, very special guest, former world-class championship wrestling heavyweight champion. He is, of course, the Latin heartthrob himself, Mr. Al Perez. Al, welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
John, how are you doing? Nice to be here. Glad to have me on your show.
Thank you so much. Great to have you. And, of course, I got to mention this first, Glory Days GrappleCon in Orlando, Florida at the Rosen Center Hotel, April 20th. If tickets are available on Eventbrite. That's going to be an awesome one. It's a world-class championship wrestling reunion, including the Heroes of Sportatorium special Q&A. So awesome thing going on in April in Orlando.
Yep. From what I understand, there's going to be a lot of big-time names, especially the world-class guys. And there's an interview asking answer questions there. And I'm part of it, so I'm looking forward to answering questions and giving all the info I can.
Pretty cool getting all the Sportatorium guys, all the world-class guys together for that. Pretty rare to be able to do that, obviously all these years later, but very rare to be able to do that down in Orlando.
Yeah, it is. I've been out a little over 30 years, and I still get phone calls and people wanting autographs and I enjoyed doing it for the fans because they made me who I am today, I guess, you know.
When you look at it, is that some of the best times you had was World Class? Is that maybe like a favorite territory of yours?
Yeah, I had some good territories, good runs, and a lot of territories that I were in. But World Class is where I became the Latin heartthrob and met Gary Hart. And he's the one that got me started with it. And I ran with it as far as I could, or as far as they let me.
When you look at it, though, like World Class, so memorable. Now the Iron Claw movie came out, so now even more memorable. I feel like World Class is having like a bit of a renaissance, a bit of a resurgence lately.
Yeah, it has. Well, to me, World Class has always been way bigger than every other organization. I believe it was one of the first ones to go nationwide on cable TV. And back then, they had some really big stars. All the Von Erichs were there. And, you know, Gino Hernandez, Chris Adams, the Freebirds, you know. There was a bunch of guys out there who started off that territory pretty good. And I just came in right after the big boom of professional wrestling with World Class. So I was glad to be a part of it.
Did you happen to see the movie, The Iron Claw? What did you think of it if you did see it?
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it yet. You know, looking forward to it. I get phone calls about this and about that to see what was going on with all the Von Erichs. And from what I heard, a lot of it isn't accurate, you know. But when I see it, I'll be able to tell.
Oh, yeah. It's a good movie, but there's definitely some historical inaccuracies big time.
Yeah. Well, it's a movie. I hope people realize that it is a movie and it was produced to make everybody look good or look bad. You know, from what one of the questions was about Fritz Von Erich, he said, oh, he was mean, he was hard. He made a living in the wrestling business and wanted his kids to do the same thing. And they were saying that, oh, he pushed steroids. Fritz Von Erich did not push steroids on any of his kids. That was all their own doing. Whatever they were doing, that was them. Fritz wanted them to be successful because he was. So, I had no problems with Fritz. I worked with him, and he demanded respect, and he gave respect when it was deserved.
Did you think that Fritz was maybe a little too hard on the kids? Because that's kind of the consensus from the movie, that he might have been a little too hard on them, and maybe not accurate to real life?
Well, I guess any parent with success that he had in the business would want his kids to be the same way, you know. And they were kind of wild and crazy, but, you know, he just demanded them to do the right thing. And from what I've seen of them, he was right and maybe a little hard because they were drifting. They were all drifting.
Does seem like that's like the story. They were kind of doing their own thing, maybe partying too much, maybe missing shows too much, right? Is that kind of the consensus?
Yeah. They were doing what they wanted to do when they wanted to do it. And everything else was secondary. they all had fantastic athletic ability, but they just, you know, they liked to party.
Did you get along with them?
Yeah, I did. I really did, with Kevin and Kerry and even Chris, you know, because Mike was gone already and David was gone already by the time I got there. But I got along great with all the other three and Fritz. You know, I had, like I said, Fritz demanded respect and he gave respect when it was deserved. Did my job what I was supposed to do, and I did it, and I did it. I thought I did it well. And I had a really great manager with Gary Hart. So, I mean, everything was in my way to go. I had to go with it. I ran with it.
How would you explain Gary Hart? Because I feel like so many people don't remember him or don't kind of give him his flowers as far as being one of the greatest managers, just a legendary guy. What are your thoughts on him?
Gary Hart was, I'm going to say, the best manager of all time. Yeah. He knew the business. He could call the shots. And he could do. He performed before he got hurt. But he was the greatest. To me, he was the greatest manager. He let you get your own heat. He interfered very, very little because he didn't want to take off the opponent or his guy in the ring. So he let you do your thing. And if you needed a little boost, like I said earlier in another interview I did, that Gary would just walk around the ring, and if I was in trouble, he would hit the mat. And just by a little distraction like that, you turn your head, I would take advantage of it. So Gary was fantastic in that ring. As a manager, he was best. He was the best one. You could never ask for better than him.
How come he might not be as remembered or as revered? Is it because no time in WWF? Is that a thing? I knew he was at WCW a little bit, but maybe not a lot of the national TV? Maybe is that why?
Well, he was on national TV, but I don't think it came out as big as it is now. You know, with Von Erichs, and because he wasn't in with the Von Erichs from the beginning. He came in later on. So I think, like myself, I missed the right time of it to be that big star. But Gary was well known wherever we went. Everybody knew who Gary Hart was.
Did he teach you a lot, like as far as psychology and really learning and honing the craft as a heel?
No, I picked that up when I went to Africa because I worked in Africa for a while, and that's where I became a heel. Because they'd always try to make me a baby face. I just didn't feel comfortable as it. But when I learned how to be a heel, I mean, it's like the light came on and there was nothing I couldn't do in that ring. So everything was timing, which I had great timing and I had the ability to do in the ring, you know. And Gary was there. Gary was the voice and Gary was the inventor of a lot. He started me off really good, so I can't say anything bad about Gary.
Now, Africa, that's interesting. What were you doing at? Who was running shows in Africa, of all places?
Well, it was a promotion down there with Sammy Cohen. He has two kids over here. We're not kids now anymore, but Steven Simpson and Sean Simpson, the Simpson brothers. Their dad was a promoter up in South Africa. And he's Sammy Cohen. And I worked with, no one knows the names here, but they were pretty big. Back then, a big finish there was a hip toss. And, I mean, everybody, when you got hit with a hip toss, that was it. And when I took a few of my moves over there, it was like they were in shock. They didn't know what had happened or where that came from, you know. But that's why I learned how to be a heel.
What about the heel? Like you said, did you like? You said you felt like you could do anything, but what do you mean by that? Like, just as far as doing maybe cheating or stuff like that?
No. I very seldom did I cheat. I just the technique that I had. You know, a lot of guys would just beat an opponent down to the ground, and the way I was taught was if you beat nothing, you didn't do anything. So you got to build your opponent up and then you beat them. Then you beat somebody. That's a mentality that they don't have now, maybe because they can't, because Vince is telling them what to do and they only have so much time. I never had a time limit on my matches. They used to tell me, we need close to 20 or we need 25, keep it under. And I had free ring on what I did. So I would build my opponents before I beat them. And nowadays, even back then, they didn't do it that much like they do now. You know, now they just destroy people. And it doesn't mean anything. Now I can't watch it anymore because to me, the talent's not there. I'm not knocking the guys, but it's just they don't have the leadership or the knowledge of telling a story. Back in my day, in our day back then, you had to tell a story. You could tell a story. One of the best ones to do that was Dory Funk Jr. And I learned a lot from him. Lou Thesz, I learned a lot from him. Carl Gotch, I learned from him. The great Malenko. I had great teachers around me a lot of my career. So, I mean, they taught you timing. They taught you how to do it. They taught you to get on a hold and stay on a hold and work it from that hold and tell your story from there. And that's what I did.
Why do you think that's a lost art nowadays? Are they just going for a cheap pop? They just want to get that crowd reaction? Is that what's going on?
I'm going to say yeah, because I think they run, 10 matches, 12 matches in a night on TV. So how much TV time do you have? 4, 5, 6 minutes a match? You can't put anything together. So the superstar has to do his job real quick. So he's beating nothing. Build your opponent up in the first 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and then take it. Then you've done something. You know, they don't do that anymore.
No, definitely not. I feel like the psychology and the storytelling is something that's a bit of a lost art, because it's a lot of move, and then another move.
Yeah, well, sometimes, what's that old saying? Less is more.
Yeah.
If you get on the hold and you work that hold, and he gets out and you get back on that hold, and something happens, you get back on that hold, you're telling a story about the arm or the leg, whatever body part you're working. And if the guy sells it the right way, it meant something. So that's why I took advantage of the old timers. The old timers, I'm one of them old timers now too. But the old timers, they taught you. Dory Funk Jr., first 15 minutes of a match, he had people sleeping. 5 minutes after that, he has people throwing popcorn at him. After that, they're ready to kill him. And all he would do is just sit on one hold. So I put that together with a lot of other stuff and worked it where it kept the man, the opponent, alive when I was working them. I never let a guy just lay around and do nothing. I was always shaking him. I was always keeping him going, keeping him afloat, making him wanting to fight back, making the people get behind him to fight back. They don't do that now.
No. Definitely lost art. I don't know why either. I guess it could be just for like the cheap pop, but I don't know why. I love that old school style where you're really working and the crowd's getting invested. I love that.
Yeah. Well, nowadays, I mean, like I said, I don't watch it very much. I haven't watched it in a while. But if you watch them, they're more concerned about the time and where the opponent's at and their spots that they're going to do. In my day, I used to play off the crowd. You know, you look in the crowd, you pick on one person, you look at the crowd and you know, you have the guy by the neck or something. And you say, how do you like this? What do you think? And you get that one person riled up and then everybody starts doing the same thing. But you play off the crowd. They don't do that anymore.
Definitely not. Definitely a lost art, which is crazy because the crowd's got to be a big part of it.
Yeah. And I believe that's because the lack of time that they put into the match is because they have so many stories that they want to tell. They got, 10, 12, 15 matches on a TV. So you only got 4, 5, 6 minutes to get your work, get what you want to get across, and that's it.
Who do you think is the best crowd?
I'm a big fan of Dallas. I wrestled in the Arlington Stadium. It was me and Kevin, and Abdullah the Butcher and Bruiser Brody, double main event. And number of people, I'm going to say the stadium was packed, plus ringside. So, I'm going to say 100,000 people, because it was full ringside and everything. That was the biggest crowd I've ever wrestled in front of.
Is the Sportatorium crowd like the most rowdy? I know obviously not the biggest, but the most rowdy you've wrestled in front of?
Yeah. The way the Sportatorium was built, it was like everybody was ringside. I mean, the bleachers went straight up at an angle. There was 5,000 people in there, and every seat was like ringside. So, I mean, everybody had a perfect view. It was four-sided rings. And everything was just perfect. The acoustics, the sound effects, everything was just right there in the center, came right to the center. And that's where I was at. I stayed in the center of that match, and of all my matches in the sport, Sportatorium was fantastic for wrestling. I don't think you could have any other sport or any other event there other than wrestling, because that ring was built there to stay. And I mean, it was perfect setup for wrestling. They did some fantastic taping because all four corners were covered by camera, so you couldn't miss anything on TV. So it was great for wrestling.
I'm always surprised that it wasn't like as nice as you may have thought. Like as a fan, you're like, oh, it's legendary. But a lot of the wrestlers say, well, it didn't have air conditioning, didn't have heat. It wasn't the nicest place. Kind of surprised.
Yeah, it was hot. The building was hot. I had matches in there. It had to be 100 degrees in there. And I did some long matches, especially with Matt Bourne. I had some fantastic matches with Matt Bourne. And I mean, when we left that ring, the ring was soaked, and everybody in there had a show. One time I did like 90 minutes with Matt Bourne and Broadway, and then Gary Hart and Tony Bourne got together and asked for another 15 minutes. So we did another 15 minutes, and the same thing again. One, two, time ran out, asked for another 15. We did it again. At the end of that match, we had a standing ovation because it was just one of those great matches. You get a guy like who wants to work, who can work, and man, let me call the shots and we'll go, because I never beat up anybody. I always made my opponents look good. And then somebody like Matt, he had ability. He had a name. He could go. And the first 5 minutes of all our matches looked like it was a fight. And then we settled down and we start working, and we had fantastic matches. But that building was awesome for wrestling.
Did you like Matt personally? You know, there's a lot of stories. He might have been a little wacky at times.
He was wacky, but let me tell you, he was one of the up-and-up guys. He really was one of them guys that if you needed someone there, he would be there for you. So Matt, I can't say anything bad about Matt. Matt was awesome, especially as an opponent and a friend. You couldn't ask for a better one than him.
Now, World Class, you mentioned, obviously, we're talking about Sportatorium, Arlington, the Cotton Bowl. They had the convention. They had the Star Wars. I mean, they had so many big shows. But what do you think was kind of the downfall, really? Obviously, there's all the tragedy, but what really was kind of the downfall with World Class?
I think just Vince taking over everything. And because NWA went down when Crockett sold out to Turner, and then all the little territories. When I first started, I remember you can drive from Florida to California and have your trip paid for just by stopping in every town and working, because there was that many territories. Yeah, you could. You can go all the way across the country and have a place to work, have a place to stop, get a match, pick up some money, and go to the next town. And then with all the little territories closing down, I think that's what happened with Mid-South too, with Matt Cowboy Bill Watts.
Yep.
You know, Joe Blanchard down in San Antonio, same thing. The big territories just ate up the little territories. Not that World Class was small, but after a while, all wrestling was on nationwide. They were all on cable TV. And that's when sounds bad, but I'm not trying to mean it as bad. The small guys, the high flyers, when they came in, they took away from the big guys. Because, you know, it's always more exciting to see somebody flying through the air, you know, and then you get a couple of the big guys down there, matches look boring after a while, you know. But it was always, you know, when you have the Midnight Express, the Fabulous Blondes, you know, all these other teams, the smaller guys, you can't compete with the high flyers, you know, and people get used to it now. Look down in Mexico, all their matches there, because I work there too, all their matches there are high flying, but it doesn't mean anything. There's no meaning for a flip off the top rope and the guy gets right back up and goes and beats you up again, you know? So I think it was more entertaining to see the high flyers And then when the big guys came on, they was like, oh, and that was it. And then Vince took over, and he had a combination of both, the big guys and the Flyers, you know. And that I think that was the end of a lot of all the territories, you know. So there wasn't that many territories that are going to survive. Maybe they're starting to come back now. I don't know. But if they do, I want to be a part of it. I couldn't get in the ring again, but I'd be a part of it.
It does seem like with World Class, obviously, you know, WWF comes over, they kind of just take over the world, really. But all the tragedy that were going on there, it was almost too much. It was just crazy because you got David, then you got Gino Hernandez, and you got Mike Von Erich, eventually Chris Von Erich. I mean, it's like one after another. It was crazy.
Yeah. Chris, I don't know. But a lot of guys didn't make it out of there. I guess I was one of the lucky ones, you know. But, there was a lot of tragedy going on. To me, if you were in Texas at any time, you had a good shot at making it big. Because Texas was the center of all sports, you know. And, yeah, Texas, like I said, Texas was good to me.
Kind of a barometer.
Yeah.
What did you think of Kevin Von Erich? Did you like him? Did you get along? He seemed a little bit more aloof, just as far as being, everyone always says Kerry was like the friendly one and who everyone kind of got along with. What about you?
Yeah, Kerry was the one that everybody got along with. Everybody liked Kerry, and Kerry was that, he had that personality. He could get along with anybody. Kevin was a little bit more hardcore, but he was also the one that, he was the hardest one to work with of all. You know, sometimes you didn't know where he was coming from. He would hit you with a foot, and you didn't know where it was coming from, you know. But, you know, we settled him down, and some guys you just can't take your hands off, because when he does, there's another one like that with Nikita Koloff. If you let him go a little bit, he would hit you with an elbow. You don't even know where it's coming from. So you had to stay on top of Kevin to control him. And once you did that with him, you could have a match with him.
Think Kerry was better?
Yeah, Kerry was better. Kevin wanted to do Kevin. Kevin didn't care about the match. Kevin cared about Kevin. Kerry would let you put a match together. And that was my specialty. I love putting a match together. You know, with Kevin, you just had to let Kevin do Kevin. You know?
It's amazing. Kerry's just his body type. He looked like a Greek god, but his athleticism, and given the fact that he had that motorcycle accident where he basically only had one foot, I mean, crazy athleticism for a guy like that.
Yeah, Kerry was really, really good. He was an athlete. I believe he was going to the Olympics.
Yeah.
Shot put or disc, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah, he was an awesome athlete, and he did have the body. You know, and he could go. He could go. I had some fantastic matches with him. You know, Fritz was one that Kerry, I beat Kerry a few times. Fritz would not let me beat Kevin. You know, we always had a double DQ, or he'd put the claw on me or something. But Kevin, you couldn't beat him. You wouldn't. His dad or himself, you couldn't. He wouldn't let you beat him, no matter how much money you were making. He was winning that match. And we could have worked some good programs together, but he wanted to make sure he was known as the best.
Why not, though, put you over and then work and make even more money on top of that?
Exactly. And that's when he didn't have the mentality for that. He wanted, you know, he was the Von Erich, and he was going to be the Von Erich when he left the match. He didn't care about working the angle, working the program. He just wanted to win.
Not thinking business-wise.
Yeah, no, not good at all.
When you're in World Class, and obviously you win the heavyweight championship, does that mean a lot then, or does that not really resonate? Like, does that mean more to you financially? Are you happy as world champion?
Yeah, I did. I was one of the few champions. Now, with NWA would send Ric Flair or whoever the world champion was, they would send him out to work in other territories. And that's how you build opponents. That's how you build territories. You know, Like I said, I took that title to the Bahamas. I took that title to Trinidad. I defended against their guys. You know, the WWF, their guys only worked with WWF. World Class sent their champions out to work with other champions. You know, just like Ric Flair did here, Jack Briscoe did here, Hardy Race did it. They would send them out to work with the Von Erichs or work with the Blanchards or work with the Gordys, you know, the Michael Hayes. They would work with these guys. That's how you build territories. You get that one baby face in that territory and you work a program with them.
Yeah.
You don't beat the guy. You work an angle, you work a program, and then you keep coming back for more. You know, that's how you build a territory. They don't do that. WWF doesn't do that. When WWF, well, they also call it a show, not a sport anymore. It's entertainment. So they would send out the WWF guys and just work with the WWF guys. I don't think there's very many of them that could work with anybody else, you know, other than their own people. I'd go out there and work with, hell, I remember the champion from Trinidad. I don't know his name. I forgot that bad. But I wrestled. I worked with him. We had riots. You know, when I was in South Africa, I had riots with their champions. The last, because I was there for 10 weeks, and then they flew me back in again for another, supposed to be 10 weeks. I made it 4 weeks because I got into a riot with beating up their cheating to beat their good guy, their baby face. And I had 5,000 people trying to kill me. So they flew me to the hospital. I was in the hospital for 7 days. And they Sammy Cohen, they talked to him because I was down in Durban, South Africa, the Indian people. And I think it was Tiger Jeet Singh that I was working with. And we were working a 4-week program. And the fans didn't like it that I cheated to win my match. Because I'm trying to work an angle, build up, you know, we're going to do a 4-week program. Let's do it. If he beats me, there's no program.
Right.
Or if I beat him, I have to cheat to beat him. Then I can start a program. But they didn't like how I did it. So I had like 5,000 people trying to kill me. They flew me to the hospital. I was in the hospital 7 days. They contacted Sammy Cohen about, you know, am I coming back? And he said, yeah, he'll come down and make an interview and settle it. He goes, no. If he can't wrestle, send him home because they want to kill him. So I did my job, but I think I went a little bit too far overboard. Okay.
Right. Cost yourself some money.
Yeah. So they got me out. They sent me home after 4 weeks. And for about 3 years later, I would still get phone calls from South Africa, Durban, South Africa, to finish that match. I used to use that against my wife. I'm going to go to Africa and end this right now. You know, after a while, she said, go. So
did you ever go back?
No. Oh, no. My wife would have killed me herself.
Too dangerous. Too dangerous.
Yeah. But I had a good run. And Barry Horowitz told me that one time. I was signing autographs with him right next to me. He said, yeah, world champion, only in Dallas, only in Texas. No, Barry, I took that title out. I took that title and worked different territories with that title, with different people, with different champions. Not like the WWF. It's a show, and they're going to let you know, but it's a show. So our guys working against our guys. It's not a world champion.
Why did you leave World Class?
I'm not even sure why. I guess they contacted Gary Hart, you know, Ted Turner or Dusty. I know Dusty was good friends with Gary. And they contacted me and asked if I wanted to come up. And Gary and I said, yeah, let's go. So I went to NWA. At the time, Dusty was a booker. And I believe I'm not sure if he was world champion at the time or if it was Ric Flair still. But with my luck, I started off with Nikita Koloff. I worked probably about 3 or 4 months in angles with Nikita, and we had great matches. And then Jim Barnett and everybody got involved in it, and it was just time for me to get out. I told Gary, because they started putting Gary with Abdullah the Butcher and Larry Zbyszko and all these other guys, and he wasn't going out with me. And that was our thing. We're going to go out together. We stayed together. Okay, that was the only thing that I can say negative about Gary, was he had an opportunity to go and stay with Abdullah or you know, the main event matches at the time. And he took that way out. I told Gary when they changed Booker's again, I was giving my 2-week notice. I believe that Booker came in was Ken Mantell, I think. I'm not even sure. I believe that was a Booker. And Flair and Dusty were having their feud, you know, who was going to be the world champion again, who was going to do this, who was going to do that. And then Flair got into Ken's or the Booker's ear, and he was going to be the world champion again. And yeah, he was good. I can't take anything away from Flair. He was good. He was definitely a world champion. But the next thing I know, after I gave my 2-week notice, I was booked with Flair. And I told Rick, I said, Rick, I will put you over in every town. I don't care. However you want to do it. But when we come to Florida, you're not beating me. And I let him beat me. He beat me in every town we went to. We came to Florida in St. Petersburg, and he said, I will do a double DQ. I said, okay, that's fine. And I was taking my time getting dressed because I knew it was coming. Here comes a Booker, and he tells me, how do you figure my world champion beating you is going to hurt you? He's beating everybody. He's beating Dusty. I said, it's not going to hurt me. He said, good. I said, because he's not going to beat me. And he said, well, I don't need you anymore. I said, goodbye. And because those were my fans. Here, it wasn't for the world title or anything, but those were my fans coming to see me. I said, okay, you're not going to beat me at home. And Rick, you know, he knew I was serious. He said, no, I understand. So that was it for me. You know, that's when I went to WWF. I was still doing Japan a little bit. So it was an experience.
How'd you get into WWF? Like, who contacted you? Like Pat Patterson, or is that maybe Dusty again getting in?
No. Dusty went to Florida and opened up Florida. That's why when I left NWA, I came back to Florida because I was going to work with Dusty. And the territory was already shot. It wasn't going anywhere. So then Dusty went to WWF. And I had no place else to go other than Japan. So my wife had sent all my information, all the photos, everything to Vince. And they contacted me, and I went to work for them. I think I was there maybe 6 months, 5 months, 6 months, something like that. And they never beat me. They never put me on their TV. And that was another problem. I was there. The reason I left there was... Pat Patterson approached me one day and told me, Al, come here. You know, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk. So, you know, I've always heard stories, and I saw it one time with my own eyes. Okay. We're all at a hotel to check in, and this one guy up front, you know, the clerk asked him how many beds, one or two. And he said, two. And the voice from behind me, which Pat Patterson, said one bed will be fine. So I didn't say nothing. I didn't care. It wasn't my business. But then the next TV, Pat Patterson comes up to me and tells me, Al, let's talk. Okay, let's talk. So he tells me, oh, you're going to make a lot of money. We'll give you a gimmick. We'll put this on you, put you on a TV. You'll be a big star. You'll be making all kind of money. Besides that, here you go both ways. And I kicked him off the table, and he, no, what are you talking about? I'm talking about bad guy or good guy. What do you think I meant? So I was like, eh. The next TV time, Vince comes up to me and tells me, Al, I know you're having a hard time with the WWF. Nobody knows who you are. I said, Vince, every match I go to, every town I'm in, everybody hollers, Al Perez, Latin Heartthrob, where's Gary Hart? And Kerry Von Erich's going to kick your ass. No matter what towns I go to, all three, Latin Heartthrob, Gary Hart, and Kerry Von Erich's going to kick your ass. And you're telling me nobody knows who I am. He said, well, to the New York crowd, is different. I said, so basically, I'm a piece of shit to the New York crowd. He goes, no. I said, yeah, Vince, I'm a piece of shit because nobody knows who I am. He said, you'll see it'd be a lot easier once we get you on our TV. I said, okay. The next day, because they run TV 2 days in a row, next day he comes up to me and says, Al, I'm looking for somebody to make my world champion look good. You would be perfect. I said, me? He goes, yeah. I said, Vince, yesterday I was a piece of shit to the New York crowd. Today I'm over big enough to make your world champion look good? He goes, yeah. I said, you got the wrong guy. And that was it for me there. You know, I didn't play games. I was there to work. I was there to wrestle. And that's what I was going to do. And to play little Mickey Mouse games like that, it's not for me. I'd rather just go home.
So why do you think Vince said that, though? Like, was he trying to, like, bust balls? Or what was he trying to do?
I don't know. Because, you know, Vince going through a lot of stuff right now on his own.
Yeah.
And the way I look at it is, if you're not like that, why do you surround yourself with people like that? I wasn't going to play the game that they wanted to play. So I wasn't going to take it. And they didn't think they'd do somebody else. Because right after I left, they brought in Razor Ramon. You know, a Latin guy. They kept telling me, oh, we'll shave your head. We'll give you... No, you have 20 other guys that are bald. Why do you have to shave my head? You know, oh, we'll put you on. How come you don't wear a fancy robe? I said, what do I need a fancy robe for? When I get to the ring, I'm taking it off. You know, I said, I'm here to wrestle. I'm not here to look like, oh, look at his robe. Or look at his bald head. Everybody's got a bald head. You know, so, I mean, if you didn't know what you're going to do with me, then don't bring me in. You know, I think what they just wanted to do was just lock me out of another territory. You know, so that was my story with them.
Do you think that they could have utilized, like let's say the Latin market, like they were trying to do with Razor Ramon at one point, and eventually Tito, you know, obviously before, but again after when he's El Matador. Do you think that they could have utilized you better in that way?
I think they could have. I really do. I think they could have. Like I said, I just didn't play that game that they may have wanted to play. You know, like I said, I seen and I heard a few guys talk about, you know, and that I don't play those type of games, you know. So maybe that was the end of me.
Now, I think so interesting is the Black Scorpion stuff. What is the true story? Because I hear a million different things. Even Kevin Sullivan told me one story. And I was like, he's like, I don't know if that's true because of Ole. And so how come you go WCW and you're, I think, going to be the Black Scorpion, I think.
Okay. That there was Flair. Ric Flair, that was his deal for the Black Scorpion. Okay. They brought me in one time to work that match with Sting.
Yes.
And I had two masks on. I put him over. He pulls the one mask off. I still had another mask off, and I screwed out. And yep. Then there was another Black Scorpion on the stage. Okay, so it was supposed to be Rick. I was never offered that position to do it the whole time. So I believe that was Flair that was going to do that. It was supposed to be him that was going to do it at the end. He was going to be the one that popped out. So, yeah, I was offered one time. They never said anything about coming back to do it.
So it wasn't going to be you as the reveal as the Black Scorpion at all?
No.
Interesting, because they tease like some of the stuff, and it's like he was in World Class, you know, he knew Sting from Mitza. Like they tease weird stuff, and it seemed like, wait, is it going to be Al Perez, or like are they teasing Ultimate Warrior? Like, what are they teasing here? It was very confusing.
Yeah. No, they like I said, they never told me anything. They just flew me in that one match. Matter of fact, I forgot that they painted my boots black.
Wow, really? Just for yes. The angle.
They painted my boots black because I always wore white boots. you know, and they painted my boots black for that one match. And matter of fact, it was my cousin who was on stage as the Black Scorpion.
Oh, and he was he a wrestler or?
Yeah, yeah, Lou Perez.
Oh, okay. Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Okay.
Matter of fact, yeah, he was the one on stage. So I don't think, and they never called him back either, I don't think. So I don't know what happened to that angle, if they just killed it there or whatever. But no, I was only that one shot.
It's funny, at the end it's revealed to be Flair, but the voice when he's doing the cartoon stuff was Ole doing the Black Scorpion.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, Flair's got a voice, you know, you recognize his voice wherever he goes, you know. But yeah, I was never offered that position.
Now, they literally just would bring you in for one show and say, hey, we're going to make you the Black Scorpion. We're going to paint your boots. But that's it. It's just one and done. Like they had no plans.
They didn't even tell me that. They didn't even tell me that. When I got there, I had my regular gear. And they said, you're going to wear black tights. You're going to be the Black Scorpion. They painted my mask. I said, okay, just that one shot. Wear two masks. You'll pull one off. That way you're still covered. All right. So I did it. I didn't know if I was coming back or not. I never asked, and they never told.
Was Ole Anderson a big fan of yours? Or are you a big fan of Ole at all, or no real relationship with Ole?
No real. I never ran into Ole. Never had, you know, worked with him or for him or against him or anything.
What about Flair, though, as far as being like a booker? Any sort of, like, gift? Because I know you're saying you guys had issues in the past, but now that he's, let's say, he's booking the shows and calling the shots, is there any issue there with him?
I never had any issues with him. You know, Flair was for Flair. You know, I mean, he was, like I said, you can't take anything away from him in the ring. You know, not even as a person. He's not a bad guy, you know. But in the business, and this happens to a lot of people, they can't let go. You know, they either like the limelight, like the... all the fans, sometimes you have to let it go. You know, he's still trying to work. He's still trying to get involved, you know. It's like, man, you're in your 70s. It's time to stop, you know. But a lot of these guys, that's what they did for a living. That's all they know. So you can't really blame them for trying to stay in it because that's their livelihood. When I got out of the business, cause I got hurt a few times. And when I got hurt, I'd come home and I'd get a job. You know, when I healed, I went back to it. But when I retired, I walked away, and that was it. I walked away.
So you're not a fan of the Black Scorpion, though? Just to clarify, not a fan of that gimmick.
No, uh-uh.
What an interesting thing. It's funny, like for years, like I guess Al Perez was supposed to be the Black Scorpion. Then they just ended up being Flair. But I guess that's not the case.
Yeah, no, uh-uh. If there was an angle to work, Flair was going to work it.
Do you wish you could have stayed on longer for WCW? Because, you know, they could have used some more talent at that point.
Yeah. I would have loved to stay there, you know, because that was my type of company. You know, they had a booker. When Dusty was a booker, I mean, he ran it like it wasn't all about Dusty. Okay. I mean, he had angles going on with a lot of other people going on. He was pushing other people, not just himself. You know, a lot of the guys, all they want to do is push themselves. You know, I worked an angle with Nikita, like I said, like 2, 3, 4 months. You know, and I liked it because that was my type of work. You know, you get in the ring and you do your work and you put in, you know, and that's what my thing was. I loved it. Okay. I love what I did for a living. He told me one time, you know, if you love what you do for your work, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yep.
When they told me that, I said, no, that's bullshit. I said, if you love what you do, you work harder at it to get better. And that's why I'm going to brag a little bit. I think I was probably one of the best ones in the ring at that time because I could tell a story. I could do the time. I could do it, you know, and I wanted to do it. I didn't have any problems with it, but it just, you know, didn't work out all the way for me.
Not going to play the politics game either, right?
No, I never did. I never did. Whatever y'all did behind the closed doors, I don't care. Just let me know what I'm supposed to do and let me do my job. You know? The politics I still don't do.
Were you a big party guy or no?
No, No. Dustin, one time, we were in Atlanta, and I'd get out there and I'd start running. And, you know, because I tried to stay in shape as much as possible, you know, and I'd get out there and I start running, and Dustin tells me, Al, it's a work. Yeah, but you don't understand. When it's time to go, I want to be able to do my job and not blow up. You know, I've had guys that, you know, they thought they were in shape, and man, you get them in the ring and they can't hardly move. You know, those are the guys that I didn't like to work with.
Were you a Dusty guy? I know, obviously, you know, you wrestled Dustin too very early, but were you a Dusty guy or no?
I was a Dusty guy. Yeah. Dusty, when I went to NWA, it was Dusty. And like I said, he never beat me. He never had me on TV where I did a job for anybody. He kept me alive wherever I did. And he worked my angle with Nikita. And my next step was, I'm not sure who it was, but that's when they started feuding for the book again and feuding for who was going to be world champion again. It's like, oh, the politics. And I didn't need the politics.
When you look at like just the grand scheme of the wrestling business, it seems like politics is always, you know, rearing its ugly head.
Yeah, politics is in everywhere. But when you have politics and egos, that's not going to be good.
It seems like Dallas and you were definitely hand in hand because Global comes, NWA, Dallas, right? Did you just love that area, or were you so over maybe in that area they just kind of wanted to keep bringing you back for different things?
I know I was over in Dallas. You know, that was my territory. You know, you get to a territory like that, I mean, you call that home. You know, because I mean, that was where I felt comfortable. I could do anything there, and I was home. You know,
and even a young Buff Bagwell, I believe you wrestled, a handsome stranger. I think you wrestled at one point in Global.
Yeah, I'm not. I can't remember names or matches. I got CRF really, really bad.
If you just go back and you look at some of that stuff, it's just like funny. It's like handsome stranger becomes Buff, Soul Taker becomes Godfather. Like the guys that you wrestled became, you know, pretty big names in the business many, many years later, though.
Yeah. Well. When Sting first started, Sting couldn't sell tickets. Sting could sell pictures. The young girls, the little girls loved Sting with all that paint and everything. Oh, they loved Sting. But he couldn't sell tickets. He was selling pictures. And there was a difference back then. Pictures and tickets. Pictures don't put ass in seats.
Right.
You know? But he's come a long ways. He came a long ways with it. I believe also that was part of killing territories too, because a pretty baby face good with the paint on him, you can't have a baby face superstar as a champion, because who are you going to bring in to lose to your champion? To me, a heel has to be your champion, because he travels to other territories, works with the superstar babyface, puts him over, beats him, works your angle with him, and walks out there with a DQ or no, and everybody's still alive. That's how you build a champ. That's how you build territories. They don't do that anymore. Everything's an eagle. Like, even I'm gonna say, like Kevin. Kevin is a world champion in Texas. Who's gonna want to go to Texas? Or where's he going to go? Let's say he comes to Florida. Nobody cares about Kevin Von Erich, you know, as a world champion. They want their local boy, you know. So your heel has to be the champion to make it work. Because you travel to different territories. You build territories like that. When your baby face is your champion, it's a dead territory.
Which Sting, crazy, just retired, basically a few weeks ago, just retired at the age of 64. So he was still going. Can you believe that? He was still wrestling all this time, basically 39 years.
Yeah, that's a long time. It's a long time to take the abuse. I think I did right under 15 years, he did good. He did good for himself, but he's another one that it's a little kind of old to be in the ring. People nowadays don't want to see. Look at the size of the guys that you have out there now. They're huge. Nobody wants to see an old man wrestle. You have to keep your shirt on because you're flabby. That's like wearing a ring jacket to the ring. You still have to take it off. When you go out to the ring and you have to wear a t-shirt because you look like hell, nobody wants to see that. Most of wrestling like that is appearance. If you look the part, people believe it. If you don't look the part, stay out of it. And Sting, because one of the last matches I saw him, he had a t-shirt on.
Yeah, yep.
He didn't want to take his t-shirt off. Well, it's time for you to get out. That was just my opinion.
Do you think you and Sting like always got along and were always like buddies or no? Or different?
No. Different ways.
Did you like working them?
No.
No? Okay. Interesting.
Well, like when he started out, because I was on my way out when he was coming up. Okay. I did a match with Nikita. I think it was down in Miami. And I put him over. And then Gary Hart and I got my heat back. And Dusty sent Sting out to chase me away. Okay. Well, I'm beating on Nikita. Gary's holding him. I'm beating on Nikita. Here comes Sting. Nikita's laying down. He confronts Gary and I, and he expects me to leave to run. We just beat the hell out of Nikita. What's going to stop me from beating the hell out of you?
Right. A bigger guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Nikita's bigger. Yeah.
He told me, get out, get out. I said, I'm not getting out. You get out. You got to get out. I said, no, you got to get out. And about that time, Gary put his hand between him and I and says, come on, Alf, let's go. And he just walked me back out. We left. He got back to the dressing room and he tells Dusty, Al didn't leave. Al didn't run. And Dusty told him, next time, take a chair. I never ran from anybody. Especially in a ring like that. Here, there's two of us and one of you, and I'm going to run? So he had no sense. He was still selling pictures. That's all he was selling was pictures. That's the attitude. That's the frame of mind he had. He's Sting. Everybody's supposed to be scared. No, sorry. It doesn't work that way. But no, I did not get along with them. But I didn't get it. He wasn't the type of guy to go out with and hang out and drink a couple beers with.
When you wrestled him later on, was it better or did you still think he was a little green when you wrestled him when you were Black Scorpion?
No, he was better. He was a lot better. He was a lot better then.
Now, as we head towards the wind down, head towards the finish, you literally wrestled almost everywhere. If you really look at it, I mean, there's so many territories outside of World Class. What was your favorite territory to work?
Oh man. I worked California. I worked Ohio, San Antonio. I think Texas was my main one. Puerto Rico. I did Puerto Rico up until the last, with Bruiser Brody. I'd never go back there again. Hell, I wouldn't mind going back to South Africa or New Zealand.
Wow.
Yeah, because I worked in a lot of territories.
Yeah, that is true. I was looking. I didn't realize that New Zealand was such like a good territory. Like Mark Lewin was there, it's actually a big territory or a good territory.
It was really good too. I had a good time there. Enjoyed that, and I was a babyface. It's a little bit different style too. They'd go by rings and have 5 minute matches,
intervals?
Rounds, 5 minute rounds. Okay. And I wasn't used to that. you know, but that was different for me. Pat O'Connor, I worked with Pat O'Connor there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I was in a lot of territories with a lot of good talent. And Pat O'Connor, he got a short arm scissor on me, and I wasn't used to just laying still. You know, I was still a baby face. I wasn't used to laying still. He got me in that short arm scissor, and I ended up picking him up and walking him to the turnbuckle, you know, and after that, that was his spot. Let's do it again. You know, that's how I got over doing stuff like that. You know, I wouldn't sit still on it because I was going to stay alive, you know. But like even with Dory Funk Jr., he'd get me in a hold and he'd hold on to it. After a while, man, it was like, let's go. But he would get you going. He would keep you alive, you know. But Pat O'Connor was really good at that, too. He was good. There was a lot of good talent that I was around.
Did you like work in Japan?
Not really. Not really. It's a different style. It's the same thing like what's going on with the WWF. Okay? You only have a short amount of time. And I worked there. I think I was there 5 or 6 times, 7 times. And we did something to get an underneath guy trying to make a name for himself. And you throw him out of the ring. And you turn around, you work the people. And he's coming back in, kicking your ass. You know, it's like, get out, you know. I had a match with the Giant Baba. And it was weird because people really dressed it. They take that sport real serious there.
Oh, yeah.
With Giant Baba, I locked up with them. And pulls them into the ropes and clean break. And I had everybody applauded. And I did it a second time. Everybody applauded. I did it the third time. And everybody applauded. As soon as they applauded, I hit them. And it was like I had instant heat just from doing that. And as soon as I did that, but that's how I worked off the people to see what they wanted, what they liked, what they didn't like. You know, so Japan, other than him, It was tough because the selling was different. Nobody there wanted to look weak. You know, everybody was trying to make a name for themselves. Man, you already got a name. You know, become something. Don't just off your name because your name's going to end up nothing. You know, make a mark, you know.
Big time, big time. Who's some of your favorite guys that you've ever wrestled? Like, who are some of your favorite opponents?
Oh, I'm going to say my best ever was probably Matt Bourne. Matt Bourne, I worked with him quite a few times. Had some fantastic. Chris Adams had some good matches with Chris. Even Bruiser Brody had some great matches with Bruiser Brody. Abdullah the Butcher. Hell, Larry Zbyszko. You know, I had a lot of good points. Terry Taylor, Tito Santana, you know, what's the other Santana? Ricky Santana, you know, but most of these guys were baby faces and they would listen, you know, and because I didn't want to beat up anybody, you know, I kept all my opponents alive, even when I was doing the job for you, you know, I with Tito Santana. I beat him and keep him alive. And he beat somebody when he finally beat me, you know. So now I have some Luke Williams, the sheep. Back then it was the sheep herders, now the bushwhackers.
Yep.
You know, I had some great matches with them. Adrian Street, you know, there was a bunch of guys that I had great, great matches with.
When you go back and you look, any regrets in the business or no?
No regrets. Sometimes I wonder if I would do it all over again. And I have to say, yeah, I would. I've had 12 operations putting me back together from it. So wow. I mean, I regret that. You know, one of my other regrets, and not really a regret, was when my son, he was going to college. And he tells me he's going to take a year off and wrestle. And I told him, no, you're not going to take a year off and you're not going to wrestle. You're going to get an education. You're going to use your brain instead of your body. I said, look at me now. You know, I can walk okay. I had a knee replacement, both shoulders, both elbows, you know, and the weather changes and I'm in pain. So those are my only regrets, but yeah, I think I would still do it all over again.
Now, talking about Glory Days, got to mention this one last time. Glory Day GrappleCon, you can find the tickets at eventbrite.com. April 20th, Orlando, Florida, at the Rosen Center Hotel. And there's also going to be a world-class Heroes of Sportatorium special Q&A with a bunch of guys, obviously including yourself, but a bunch of world-class guys are part of that. So definitely check out GrappleCon then in Orlando on April 20th. Yeah, Orlando is a great town.
April 20th. Yep, I'll be there. It's only about a 90-mile drive for me. But I'll be there.
Nice. Anything else?
Looking forward to seeing all the guys, too. You know, Black Bart. Black Bart was one of my favorite guys to hang out with. What an up-and-up guy he was, you know. He still is. Killer Brooks. You know, there were so many guys. I can't wait to get back and see them. You know.
Anything else you got coming up?
No, right now that's about it. I stay low key. When I got out, I was out. I didn't sign autographs for about, I'm gonna say, close to 15 years. I stayed completely away from it. And then Lori Hurst called me and asked me if I would do this. I was like, you know what? Yeah, let me do it. And then to see some of the guys again, it was worth doing it. You know, Eric Emery, Frankie the Thumper. All these guys, you know, they all should be there.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that. Getting the memories back together, you know,
living
the good old days, the glory days.
Yeah, the glory days. At glory days on the 20th.
Yes. Do you do social media at all or no?
No. Uh-uh.
Smart. Yeah. Stay away from that stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Luckily, I have an iPad.
Right.
Other than that, I don't do Facebook. I don't do any of that stuff.
You know? All right. Everybody check out Al Perez, April 20th at the GrappleCon, Orlando, Florida, Rosen Center Hotel. Al, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Don, thank you. Enjoyed it. Hope everything works out for us all.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.